Hi, I'm Lena.
And I'm Aman.
And welcome to Grounded Geeks,
where we make the geek world relevant.
I forgot to do an accent. All right. Aman, what are we talking about today?
Today, we're going to do another Pixar movie.
Yay! And also, I do want to acknowledge that we do not live in a hole, and we are aware that the new Batman movie came out. We just haven't had a chance to do a proper episode on it, but it will come out.
Yes, we will definitely be doing that. But turning red.
Turning red. Okay, yeah. So Aman, what was your general impressions of the movie?
My general impression was, it was nice that a minority character in a Pixar movie didn't spend most of their time as an animal, some sort of an ephemeral being, or, you know.
Yeah.
Stayed human. I was like, that's nice.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, yeah. Like, for example, we've talked about this before, but for others who need a refresher, in The Princess and the Frog, where we get our very first Black princess, she spends the majority of the movie as a green frog. Not cool. And yeah. The Pixar movie Soul, it was better. That this one was better than Princess and the Frog.
Yeah.
But still spends a whole lot of time as a weird blob.
Blue blob.
Yeah.
Blue blob.
So this was great. Loved seeing the Asian representation. Mm-hmm. That was awesome. And I do want to call out, there was one, we're going to have to like link to some article or something about this in the show notes, but there was some guy who wrote some review of the movie. And in his review, he was like, I don't feel seen in this movie because it's about an Asian girl. And I just don't think it's a universal experience. And
was this a white guy?
Yes, of course it was. So, yeah. But Yeah. Just to provide some more background on the film. So it's about a 13-year-old girl, a Chinese Canadian girl, because this is based in Toronto. Also thought that was cool. Everything has to be about America. and essentially, she finds out one day that when she starts feeling a lot of emotions, like overwhelming emotions, whether it's happiness, sadness, anger, whatever, she turns into a giant red panda. Yeah. And so
just to put it out there, we're saying a red panda, not a red colored panda.
Yeah. Does people not know that? It's a type of animal.
I'm just trying to make it super clear. The red panda is actually not even a bear. It's more closely related to the raccoon or the weasel.
Yeah, it looks like it. Yeah. Anyway, that's a
but they are called species. Red panda, and they are super cute.
Yeah. Maybe I will link to some sort of article or video about red pandas so everyone can learn more.
Yes.
Yeah. So apparently there's this whole thing in her, it's a genetic thing in her family where all the women in the family, when they get to a certain age and they start feeling lots of different emotions, they all turn into red pandas. They're able to turn back once they calm down a bit. Yeah. But
calm the fuck down.
Wow. Aman, that's rude. So rude. Okay.
It's in the movie. All right. It's in the movie.
Okay. So yeah, I loved that this was basically one big metaphor for puberty and the shit show that is puberty. And just when you're at the age of 13, you are dealing with a lot and you do start having a lot of overwhelming emotions and feelings. And then I think we all kind of turn into red pandas, you know, I mean, it's happened to all of us. So, and it's hard.
Metaphorical red panda.
Yeah. And it's hard to navigate all those emotions. And you know, as a 13-year-old kid, it's a lot.
Yeah. So. I mean, I feel like this particular story of teenage rebellion, you know, coming of age, dealing with new, more complex emotions. It's a story that's been told over and over and over again. All right. Yeah. But I really liked how it was told in a very specific Asian cultural context.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the context, the story is universal, I feel like, but yeah, the surrounding circumstances for which everybody's story takes place, this mm-hmm. universal story takes place, and we all have it, we've all been through it. You know, if you're not 13 yet, then it's coming. It's coming, kiddo.
So sorry.
I'm so sorry. It's really gonna suck, but it's coming.
Yeah, but and it gets everybody's better.
Everybody's been through it. It's not unique, but the contexts in which it exists are and can be unique. And I like that. Yeah. In this particular movie, they told this story in a context that I haven't seen it in before.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was nice. I mean, we don't come from a Chinese background with a very specific Canadian
yeah.
cultural background, yeah. but still coming from a Asian family, there was a lot that I could see mm-hmm. from at least my own cultural context, you know, that helped yeah. me relate to this story a little bit more than, you know, I mean, what's another one? What's another movie that this, you know, teen movie has been pulled in?
I don't know why, but the first thing that popped into my head. Oh, I was trying to think of another Pixar movie. The first thing I thought of was Toy Story. So yeah.
I'm laughing because with Toy Story, the toys are not turning 13.
No, but Andy was a young child, okay? And he was going through changes, so.
He was. This is true.
That's who I'm focusing on, obviously, not the toys.
Yeah. I'm thinking like Degrassi High.
Yeah. What was I going to say? I lost it.
It's okay. We all have moments of weakness, Lena.
Man, you're so annoying. Okay. What were we talking about? Oh, this context. Yes. And I also thought really anyone who comes from any sort of immigrant background
yeah.
could relate to this story as well. If you're mm-hmm. any first generation anything, you could relate to this story. Or second yeah. generation or whatever, you know, honestly, you could, I mean, but Pat, I wouldn't, maybe third generation, you wouldn't relate, but so I just, yeah, I thought, yeah, I agree. There were a lot of different things where I loved the context of like this specific family. And yeah. I also liked how, at least it didn't appear to me that they were overtly having to explain many aspects of their culture besides the like family blessing / curse of like all the women turning into red pandas. Like obviously there was explanation for that.
Well, but no, at the very beginning of the movie, they went through this sequence of photos and she's talking about the importance of honoring your parents, you know,
yeah.
and all of that stuff. That was, I thought was a little explainy. Very close. That it was about as close to being like that rolling title card that mm-hmm. we hate from the Eternals, and the only movie that's ever yeah. worked in properly is probably Star Wars.
Right. No, but what I mean is like, they're not trying to explain like, this is the food we're eating now. And it comes, you know, like yeah. it wasn't like to that detail, you know, there,
yeah.
that scene where they show Malin's dad cooking, mm-hmm. that was so brilliant. I thought, you know, showing the slow motion chopping of like lettuce and whatever. Yeah. I was like, that's so good. You know, I love that. Like, and mm-hmm. just through that quick scene, you've shown that like the dad clearly is an awesome cook / chef yes. or whatever, you know, and
yes,
and you're showing them like they're obviously making some sort of Chinese dish, and
right,
so just with things like that, I think in general, whether it's people of color who are filmmakers, animators, writers, mm-hmm. whatever it is, I think there's been like a growing, I don't know if movement is the right word, but like there are more like creative artists who don't feel the need to explain themselves all the time more, which yes. I love.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's always better ways to talk about and explain about what it is you want the audience to pick up than just telling them. You can tell them by just showing them. And people will get it. People yeah. will get it. You know, you don't have to turn it into a weird stigma.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of stigma, you had pointed out something to me very interesting about this movie.
Yes. So I'm pretty sure, unless you can think of another animated movie, or quite honestly, there's very few real life, you know, real people movies where, you know, feminine hygiene products are shown. Definitely, I can't think of a single other animated movie that has shown
it. Can't think of it either.
And I thought that moment was so, it really, like, when you're thinking about just puberty and then like girls getting their periods and all this stuff, and no one ever talks about it. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to talk about it, you know, in certain situations and settings and whatever. And so I loved that they threw that scene in, you know?
Yeah, I definitely had a little bit of a interesting growing up experience, because I had a number of female friends who didn't feel the need, who found some particular joy, I think, in explaining to me in great detail what they went through. So I learned a lot and I took notes, because I was like, this is important to know what the other half of the human species is going through.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, yeah, most people don't talk about it. Most guys don't know what their significant others, what female members of their family go through, have gone through. You know, you still have these weird fucking stigmas around feminine hygiene products, you know? Yep. I was reading this this BuzzFeed thing. Somebody had posted a, you know, am I the asshole situation? And this woman was saying how she had to switch to using tampons for some undisclosed medical reason. Mm-hmm. All right. And her husband was not comfortable with her using tampons. And it was like, he wouldn't explain why. He just wasn't comfortable.
I read sorry to interrupt.
Did you hear about this one?
I heard about this one and I didn't even finish reading, because I was like, I literally cannot with this.
But the thing is that is indicative of a mass, not just a bad stigmatization in society of feminine hygiene products, feminine hygiene in general, all right? Mm-hmm. But it also speaks to a massive, massive lack of education, you know? And yeah. I would say that the lack of education isn't just amongst men. I think there are a lot of women who are not properly educated around the use of products that are designed for them, even. You know, I think you see it just in certain prejudices people have, especially in this country, you know, and I don't even want to talk about places where, you know, you can't even buy feminine hygiene products just off the shelf.
I was going to say, when I studied abroad in Egypt, I remember like obviously having to buy like pads and stuff and from the grocery store, and the clerk would, you know, all the whatever other grocery items you're getting, you know, like they would put it in a regular bag, and then
right.
any feminine products they would like double triple wrap it in like brown paper bag paper, you know, and yeah. so that like no one could see what is in this package. And I would be like, cool, thanks. Like, and so it's just, yeah, this, it's so weird. Like, and that's in a lot of countries too, not just Egypt.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. And that's, I think that's the case in America too, to a great extent. Mm-hmm. You know, did you know that there's a law? Have you ever noticed in commercials on feminine hygiene products that they always use this like blue water looking liquid to show how absorbent it is? It's because there's a law that they can't use or show anything that looks like blood.
That looks specifically like menstrual blood or any blood?
Blood. I think it's blood, but it is a law specifically around ads for feminine hygiene products. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the same reason why beer commercials can't show anybody actually drinking said beer.
Oh, really? I feel like I've definitely seen people drinking. Oh,
you see it on TV shows, but not
in ads too. No. I could really. No. Oh, I'm
gonna. You'll always see people with the bottle or the glass or whatever, but never actually taking a sip from it, because Okay. It's illegal.
All right. I'm going to look that up.
Yeah.
Or I'm gonna pay attention next time I see an ad like that.
Yep. Yep. But the thing is that for feminine hygiene products, like, I'm sorry, you're talking about 50% of the population and you can't show that your product works well in an actual, like, even semi-believable thing, you know? Like, that's why the liquid is even blue. Like, what?
I also thought it was interesting that, I don't know if this happened with you when you were in elementary school, but I remember in fifth grade, they separated the boys and girls, and we were living in America by the time I was in fifth grade. So this is not in Pakistan, but
for health class.
Yeah, no, in fifth grade, it wasn't even health class. We didn't have health class at that point because this was elementary school. And, but I remember one day they were like, we're going to teach you all about your bodies. And, but they separated the boys and the girls. So they talked to boys about boy stuff and they talked to girls about girl stuff, which, I mean, I can see pros and cons to it, right? Pro being that, yes, maybe some girls are uncomfortable, like maybe they want to ask questions, but they wouldn't feel comfortable asking in front of boys. In that sense, that's good, right?
Yes.
Providing a safe space for that kind of Q&A to happen. That's great. But I think both boys and girls should be taught about each other in that sense. You know, the actual lecture part could have been co-ed. So,
right. I'm sure, though, that there's a lot of, you know, immigrant parents, though, who may have rebelled at that idea.
Not even immigrant parents. Let's be honest, you know, it's not. Yeah. But and then obviously by high school, like health class was just all boys and girls together and stuff. But it really depends on, and now I'm speaking specifically to the US, right? Because that's what we know in terms of the education system. Right. But at least in the US, I think it really, really depends what state you grew up in terms of what you learned in health class.
Like,
we got certified in first aid, for example, in health class. When I talked to other friends who grew up in other parts of the country, they were like, I have no idea how to do the Heimlich maneuver. And I'm like, that's not helpful. Okay. So
note to self, don't choke around you.
Yeah, literally. Okay. We'll take smaller bites. But
I will chew more carefully if it's just you who's around.
Yeah. So yeah, it's all interesting. But back to the movie Turning Red.
Yes.
I thought that was a great moment in the film. And also just shout out to Sandra Oh, who does the voice for the mom, because I love her and she's fantastic in everything. So, yeah.
I wanted to give a shout out to James Hong. He does the voice of Mr. Gao. The old man
who with the chanting. Yeah. Okay.
James Hong. He does the voice also of Poe and no, not Poe. Poe's dad, Mr. Ping.
Yeah. Wasn't he also in Mulan?
Panda.
Wait, say it again.
He has, I think I heard well over 300 movie credits to his name.
Wow. Amazing.
I mean, I think it might be more than that, but the list of movies where his name has appeared in the credits in some way, shape, and form for something is counted in the hundreds. More than 100, more than 200 for sure. I'm pretty sure more than 300, but in the hundreds, this guy is very, very prolific.
Wow. That's amazing. Shout out to him too. Nice.
He a real pioneer actually in Asian for Asian representation in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we think about Bruce Lee as one person, but James Hong and they both are founders of this acting troupe, East acting troupe. I can't remember the name of it for the life of me because I just thought of it while we were recording this and didn't think to look it up ahead of time. But it's like it's a big deal thing. Like if you are an Asian actor or an actor of Asian descent, and you are able to get in touch and be a part of this troupe of this school or whatever it is, like that is your best foot in the door into Hollywood, you know? Mm-hmm. And the thing is that I think it's sad that, if you're Asian, that is the only surefire way for you to get your foot in the door. If you have a serious amount of talent, you know, short of that, like good luck.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, good luck. But James Hong, fucking legend. All right. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. hundreds.
Amazing.
I think he holds a record actually for most credits, movie credits where his name has appeared.
Yeah. Wow. That's impressive. Mm-hmm. That's why while this wasn't necessarily my absolute favorite Pixar movie, I still really enjoyed it. I loved it. And yeah. I thought having that Asian representation was very important.
I think so too. Mm-hmm. I really, really think so too. Also, another shout out to not needing orphans to tell a good story.
Oh my God. Yeah, seriously.
Nothing against orphans, but... Right.
Disney has a long history of only telling stories about orphans and thinking that all the magic in your life happens after your parents die. What? Like, no.
Yeah. It's awful. So. Yeah. But also another nice thing, I liked how on the one hand you had the main character, Mei Lin. Also, I was very confused about why they called her Mei Mei. And then I realized that this is a Cantonese speaking family, not a Mandarin
speaking
family. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that confused me at first because fun little fact, I took Chinese in college for about a year and a half. So I know that Mei Mei means little sister in Mandarin Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. I was like, what? Why did they call her? Why'd they pick that as her nickname? And then I was like, oh, okay, they speak in Cantonese.
Yeah. I was wondering the same thing, actually. Mm-hmm. So one last thing I wanted to bring up was we were talking about this before and we each have our own theories, but why do you think the movie was set in 2002?
Because it was pre-smartphones and you couldn't just take pictures and put it right up on the internet immediately because that would have ruined the plot of the movie.
Yep, that's exactly what I was thinking too. Guess we had the same theory. I also think that the filmmaker, screenwriter, I think the director also wrote the screenplay along with mm-hmm. someone else. But yeah. I think they were basing it off of their own experiences too.
Yes. You tell the stories you know.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this specific plot line story, whatever, mm-hmm. Would have been way too complicated with social media.
Right. it would have been really hard to tell.
Yeah.
But you know, there was one other thing that I thought was really interesting about this movie in terms of the plot. It starts off telling a story about how this young woman, this girl, Mei Lin, is basically going on a journey where she is rebelling against her mother.
Yeah. Right?
But the way they ended the movie, her rebellion actually leads to her specifically honoring her family.
Yes, that was what was so beautiful about it. And the part where near the end where, you know, all the women turn into red pandas, which I loved. Yep. I was like, yes. And, yes. And then they all end up in that like forest dreamscape thing. And then she sees her mom and her mom is like a little 13-year-old like herself
right.
at that time. Mm-hmm. That part, oh, when she was like, I'll never be good enough. I'll never, you know, and
right.
it was like saying the same exact things that Mei Lin mm-hmm. had been feeling. And I was like, this is such a generational issue. And this is generational trauma and we have to break the cycle. And I actually got very emotional at that point.
Right.
I feel like every Pixar movie I could be like, or every Disney animated movie is one of the points they're trying to make is generational trauma.
Yep.
Similar to what we were talking about with Encanto a few episodes ago.
Yeah. It really is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Breaking the cycle.
Yeah.
Breaking the cycle.
Exactly. On that note, thank you as always for listening to Grounded Geeks.
And we'll catch you next time.
and go break your own generational trauma cycles.
Huzzah!